Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radio Lab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radio Lab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this week on Morning Edition, we're airing audio essays by five black thinkers in a series called Dear Mr. President. We'll have those essayists on the show to discuss their work, too. And with me now is Robert Jones, a Brooklyn writer, whose essay was called One Black Body, which is largely about notions of black masculinity. Robert, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And your essay, for people who haven't heard it, was about your grandfather, who for a long time rejected you, didn't even talk to you because you're gay, but he came to evolve. And you wrote that for black men like your grandfather, being gay equaled failure at manhood. Can you talk about his idea of manhood in the context of his life?
Certainly. My grandfather was exposed very early on to concepts of black masculinity associated with the Nation of Islam. And that set has a very stringent view of what it means to be a black man. One of the unspoken truths about black men in the black community in America is that many of us walk around feeling as though we're failed white men. And we see ourselves that way because we see white men have power and resources and material items, all of these things that we covet. And we think if we follow a stringent example of manhood as set forth by white men, then perhaps we'll reach some sort of level of power as well.
And so you think black men develop certain notions of masculinity partly because they feel emasculated within a white society.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct.
What effects do you think that societal emasculation has on one's notion of masculinity?
It certainly makes black men believe that, the way to achieve my manhood then is through some sort of force or violence. I have to grab it back because that way I can protect my friends, myself, my family. And I need women and queer people and maybe even disabled people to be subordinate so that I can basically be at the top of some hierarchy.
Listeners, we invite your phone calls for Robert Jones. Black men and black women want to react to his ideas about black masculinity and his story about him and his grandfather. Non-black listeners, you too, maybe in the context of a series called Dear President, Masculinity in America, as Donald Trump's version replaces Barack Obama's in the White House. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Your grandfather died in 2014 at the age of 96, you tell us, but he came to reconcile with you and maybe to recognize, you speculate, that his vision of black masculinity was just as limiting as white supremacy.
Absolutely. One of the wonderful things about my grandfather in his final years was that he grew to understand that his love for me was more powerful than any indoctrination he received, any misconceptions he had about what it meant to be a man. He was able to respect that there was a spectrum of manhood, not just this one very narrow thing that he had been told was what it meant to be a man, specifically a black man.
The essay series is called Dear President, and of course, Donald Trump rode old notions of masculinity to his election win. Is there something you want the president-elect to hear in the story of you and your grandfather?
Yes. Donald Trump, for me, embodies that toxic aspect of masculinity that can only realize itself as when it's putting someone down, when it's stepping on someone else's throat. His comments about women are abhorrent. They're just absolutely horrible. And one of the great disappointments for me was the number of people who voted for him, irrespective of those particular comments. They were very pointed and pointed to a very one of the things we don't talk about, which is the rape culture in this country. So what I would like Trump to recognize is to please display something healthier for not just for other men, but so that the entire country can understand that this is not how we treat others. We embrace others. We don't step on them.
The notions of masculinity that Trump appealed to are often seen as predominantly white working class. Do you think there might be some parallel experiences, or maybe just very different ones that you would want to mention, that drive a lot of guys from that demographic into, you know, cis male and straight male patriarchy, even as your grandfather's experience of being black and poor and arrested and then bolstered by the Nation of Islam affected him?
I think there are quite a number of similarities, actually. This concept of masculinity as we understand it in America relies on power. And any man, irrespective of their race, even irrespective of their sexuality, if they feel powerless, they feel violence is the way to get that power back, aggression, that we have to succumb to their power, that they have to be coercive through force. And I wish I knew the answer to how to teach them to find healthier ways to empower themselves.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Taher in Westchester. Taher, you're on WNYC. Hi.
How you doing, Brian?
Good. Thanks for calling.
In regards to what he was saying in regards about the Nation of Islam, as being a straight black man who does follow some of the teachings of the Nation of Islam, I definitely get what he's saying when he says that it's a very masculine-based culture. But what I will say is the reason why homosexuality in general is, I guess, kind of looked down in the black community is because back in the day during, you know, slavery times and so on and so forth, it was like breaking them in and making the black men look weak in regards to stuff like that. So a lot of black people hold a lot of like strength and disdain towards homosexuality because it's a way to look strong. It's a way to put yourself as the hierarchy when we never had that power beforehand.
I think that's exactly what you were saying, Robert, right?
Indeed. And additionally, there is a segment of the black population that believes that prior to European invasion, there was no such thing as homosexuality in Africa. That is provably false. But what that does is it helps people who feel powerless to feel that there's another group they can subjugate. And in addition, it gives straight black men and maybe even straight black women the power to say, I can win if there's someone beneath me. It's very sad.
Jay in Westbury, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing? Okay. Well, like I say, man, it's preach. But I wanted to ask you, you answered some of my questions that I initially wanted to ask. How does that translate specifically into the Donald Trump failed white men concept? And how basically I want you to revisit that whole concept. How does that translate into white men feeling powerless in the society that we live in? And as well, I would like you to address how can we reverse it and in the black community and allow black men to understand that education is the key to them feeling power, understanding where it is that they live, and understanding that once you understand where it is that you live, that's how you obtain power.
Great questions. To begin, I think the idea of wealth is tied very strongly to manhood in this country, and people who don't have access to that feel, particularly if they're men, feel less than men. And so that powers a lot of poor people across demographics to try to achieve that through violence and aggression and other means. To your second question about how do we push this conversation forward, that's a very great question. And I think, as you said, education is key. The key is to get many men in particular to stop thinking of education as a feminine endeavor. Not that there's anything wrong with femininity at all, but the idea that it is you're born from a man and a woman. Both of those things reside within you. There's a yin and a yang and everything in between. So there's no reason to try to to push the feminine away or to run away from the feminine. It is what makes you whole. And that's what we have to start.
How have you seen President Obama as a role model for men, black men in particular, and also men in general?
I like his intellect. I think that he held his role with a certain amount of grace, that he didn't often succumb to the idea that in order to be strong, you also had to be mean or aggressive or unkind. So for that, I appreciate the president.
He's gotten some criticism for being too preachy in telling black men to be responsible fathers, for example, without enough focus on the context of racism and the cultural dynamics that set them up. Have you thought about that question?
I have been one of his staunchest critics on that. What Obama was doing, in my opinion, was performing for white people. Often when he spoke to primarily black audiences, I almost felt like he wasn't speaking to them, but he was speaking to the white people standing behind them. These things about pull up your pants and these really superficial looks at the dynamics of race in this country and telling black people that they can't use white supremacy as an excuse. Now, I don't know any black people that use that as an excuse, but white supremacy is a material reality. It's a material obstacle. And I had hoped that the president at some point would have been able to address that directly.
Valerie in Soho, you're on WNYC with Robert Jones. Hi, Valerie. Valerie, you have to turn your radio off. All right. So I'll ask you this. I see you also reviewed the new movie Moonlight in Essence last month, and you praised it as a film that re-envisions manhood as a space where vulnerability and imagination are acceptable. Want to talk about Moonlight a little and some of that idea of, you know, masculinity that you're celebrating there?
What I loved about that film was not only how much it mirrored my own coming of age, but how it was so nuanced in its approach to masculinity that this black man who was ostensibly at some point feminine had to become masculine out of necessity to protect himself. So the movie's critique is we destroy these men by forcing them to fit into this box that we think is healthy, and it is ultimately unhealthy, and the movie displayed that with such wit.
So then what's the difference? Is there a meaningful difference worth preserving between masculinity and femininity in their enlightened forms?
You know, I struggle to try to determine what does it mean to be masculine in a healthy way. I've only seen masculinity in unhealthy ways, warlike, militaristic behavior. Anything else, to me, I'm like, what's the difference between that and femininity? Strong people can be masculine and feminine.
Let's try Valerie in Soho one more time. But Valerie, if you're there, we've got about 20 seconds for you now. Hi.
Yes, I just wanted to know if the writer is familiar with Eldridge Cleaver's book, Soul on Ice, in which he described the four categories of men and women, black women, white women, black men, and white men. And all through the election, I kept thinking that Donald Trump was going towards what Eldridge Cleaver described in 1968 as the role of white men that they were desperately trying to hold on to. I wonder if you could comment on that.
I am familiar with that work. He was a very popular figure with a lot of people and still is. He was actually a very critical of someone that I hold very dear, James Baldwin. Those ideas of toxic masculinity simply do not work.
The Son of Baldwin, your Twitter handle?
Yes, it is.
Where can people see other of your work?
You could see it on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram.
Robert Jones, thank you very much for making us think today.
Thank you.
And for starting off our Dear President series. The series continues with another essay from another writer on Morning Edition tomorrow and back here on The Brian Lehrer Show.